Since we're talking about things on our podcast that tend to circle around energy usage and climate and all the other bits and pieces we've talked about over the past couple of years, it's actually surprising to me that we haven't spoken about geoengineering in a more broad sense, because it is something that is widely discussed in a lot of these climate circles and is something that could potentially be very impactful of the way that we interact with our planet and our environment going forward. It just as a like gut reaction, what are your thoughts about like changing the environment intentionally?
Well, what do you see as geoengineering, right? I guess the typical one is, are you thinking like the large scale geoengineering projects, or are you thinking about just engineering for the climate?
So when we talk about geoengineering, it tends to be more towards these larger scale projects. So I wouldn't necessarily call like a reforestation project, which will, let's say, for instance, change the climate of a local ecology to be more humid and maybe less hot. But I would call, let's take, for instance, injecting a bunch of aerosol matter into the stratosphere to reduce the amount of sunlight that hits the earth to be a geoengineering project.
Building a dam within the middle of Africa, within the middle of the Sahara, to like re like to get water into that area and then have plants grow there. And with that, I guess that would be geoengineering. It's just like the
That would be a bit more localized, but yeah, exactly. I mean, like there's talks about like flooding the Australian outback and turning it into like an inland ocean, to create more like fertile land that can be forested or turned into farmland. And yeah, that's straight up a geoengineering project. But like, what are your thoughts on like, I don't want to, let's say, for quote unquote playing God.
My thoughts, it's quite nuanced, right? Because it's changed a lot over the years. When I was younger, when I was studying engineering, I was quite in favor of geoengineering as a means of prevention, preventing climate change and those kind of things. Obviously, being an engineer, I was like, oh, these are so cool. I wish I could be working on one of these projects. They look like they will do a lot of good if they are executed correctly. But over the years, and maybe more recently, I've kind of gone out of the mindset of like prevention, almost to the idea of, okay, climate change is happening. Like, how the heck are we gonna survive it, right? So it's changed a little bit from that preventative kind of attitude to a more like, okay, well, let's, rather than like try and change the climate, let's assume that it's gonna get really hot, and then what are the projects that we can do that can make people survive that heat or survive like, you know, these climate catastrophes and all of those kind of things. So it has shifted a bit in terms of the way that I think we should be dealing with climate change, and mostly it's about those two sides. But having said that, I think we shouldn't give up on some of the projects that I have seen, because I think they are cool and I think they can work. But the other side is that there's sometimes, when it comes to large projects where you're doing something to the environment, I feel like we're not quite at a stage where we can actually quantify the output or what will happen, like all of the side effects. So I'm in favor of more like targeted ideas, which maybe are like not as like ecologically sort of sophisticated, if that makes sense. Do you think similar, or what's your thoughts?
I am similar but different. So the fact of the matter is that we are heading for a warming planet, right? And we're not going to be able to sequester enough carbon dioxide in the next 50 years to prevent that from happening. And I'm talking about just the legacy carbon, right? We're still emitting a lot of carbon, but there's all this other carbon that's sticking around in the atmosphere that is going to be around for the next couple hundred years that is going to continuously warm the planet. And so, as you said, there's a couple of ways to go about this. We could try and fight it, or we could just accept that this is going to be a reality and try and ensure that humans weather it in the most comfortable way possible. So where I disagree with you is I'm actually pro fighting it. I'm pro doing some projects that will fundamentally change the way that the environment works, right? Or not necessarily change the way that it does, but alter it to our favor. So we see this in nature every time a volcano goes off, is that locally the climate does change because there's been an injection of a whole bunch of aerosols into the upper atmosphere. And in some cases, like when a volcano erupts and it's a pretty big one, it can go and it can actually cause a period of global cooling, which is kind of what we're trying to do, or at least we're trying to prevent global warming, right? So there are a bunch of ways that we can do this, and we can go into the details of it. But just in general, the idea is that we are going to continue warming up for a while. Let's find a way to cool the planet. And some of these ideas range from, you know, making a bunch of space-based, essentially umbrellas that reflect a bunch of the sun's light away from the Earth, so that we actually have, let's take for instance, 1% less solar radiation hitting us. It could be aerosols in the upper atmosphere that essentially make the atmosphere a bit more opaque, so we don't allow as much sunlight in. And this wouldn't necessarily be that noticeable by us. We would just be a bit cooler globally. On a local scale, you'd probably never even realize it. Then there's stuff where you fuck around with, like, the densities of clouds, and we can get into that a bit later as well.
Yeah, so there's a lot of different options, but I think what is it that draws you to these large projects? Like, what is it that inherently is? I feel like there's a certain optimism, right? I think there's a certain degree of I think it's like the technocratic kind of way of thinking about things, like let's fix these problems. And I think it can be both, right? Because I think preventative has to now be in line with the sort of handling of the actual climate impact, right? So the impact and the predictive have to be, like, together. The challenge I see, though, with these projects is that they have to be relatively inexpensive, right? Mm-hmm. Because I feel with expensive projects, it gets a lot, it's a very hard to get buy-in. And especially if it's got such a small like impact, like the output is, like, you know, a few degrees here and there. I think it gets really muddy in terms of, like, how do you get people on board with, like, funding these kinds of projects? Because I feel like most of the time it will come from a government kind of point of view, where you'll have...
And it's also the tragedy of the commons, where, you know, the atmosphere is everyone's atmosphere. The health of the planet is everyone. So let's take, for instance, the United States decides that they're going to do a geoengineering project to cool down the atmosphere while we try and reduce carbon emissions. But India is just becoming like a hyper-industrialized nation, and they're just churning out even more carbon dioxide. And the United States is like, hey, listen, we're literally cooling the planet, and you're trying to pump more CO2 into it. You are essentially taking advantage at our expense. But as you said, it is a bit of a technocratic point of view. However, not all of these are necessarily high-tech things. So, like, the idea of going and reforesting a whole bunch of the earth, you know, like large scale reforestation projects, is technically geoengineering, where it does actually affect the humidity levels and the carbon sequestration of the planet. But yes, a lot of them are very technologically advanced.
Yeah, I guess the thing is, like, how do we get it to a point where people are on board with it? Because as I was saying in my earlier story, is that we've been hearing about geoengineering as a concept for a while, and it doesn't seem to have, is it maybe not that high on the agenda for people's minds, or is it just something that goes on in the background? Is it because these projects take incredibly long to first of all research and then start executing? Is it going on and we just don't hear about it? Is it going to be like impactful enough to convince people that it's worth spending? Because we already have people who complain about Elon Musk shooting rockets into space. I can't imagine there's going to be this like a better response for, oh, we're going to just spend, you know, millions of dollars or millions of rands pumping like iron into the water to make plankton grow, right? Rather than building houses and stuff like that.
Yeah. So there's already huge amounts of public backlash from very, very vocal people saying, essentially quoting, like, don't play God. It's not our place to do that. And just fearing what the ramifications of it are. And this is going to prevent a lot of governments from actually doing that. I mean, literally, Germany went and dismantled all of its nuclear power plants because of not logic, but because of the public opinion, right? And the fact of the matter is that we have been conducting a large-scale geoengineering project, and it's called pumping a whole bunch of carbon dioxide into the atmosphere, right? We have essentially created man-made change to our environment. And in this case, it was unintentional, just due to industry. But the idea is to essentially do something similar to that, but intentionally, to try and rectify something as opposed to break something. Another example of this happening unintentionally and actually being a net benefit is big ships used to have a very high sulfur content diesel. And what this ended up doing is that sulfur would aerosolize, and it would actually perform the exact same thing that we're talking about by injecting these aerosols into the upper atmosphere. And it actually led to a global cooling, relative global cooling. So it just meant that it didn't warm as much in the areas that have the largest shipping lines. Then in the 90s, we went and we started phasing out sulfur inside of diesel for other health reasons. And it's very important that we did this, because these emissions would actually stay low down to the surface and affect us in other negative ways and cause acid rain and stuff like that, which is different to when it's in the stratosphere, which is above the clouds. But we did actually see it have a positive effect on the climate, in that it cooled the climate in those regions. And that could be construed as a geoengineering project, because it did have a broad impact. Interestingly enough, since we stopped doing that, we've actually seen accelerated global warming because we've taken this accidental geoengineering project away. So I think that it is inevitable that a government, one of the bigger governments or bodies in the world, is going to attempt this, because it will actually make a lot more sense, just due to the economic pitfalls of global warming. You know, having to do large-scale migration projects, et cetera, is very expensive.
Yeah, I feel like it has to start. Well, I think we've touched on this many times in our previous podcast, is that it has to have an economic incentive in order to get people to drive like the environmental aspects, right? We see it with the way that like certain countries are requiring imports to be like organic, for instance, and that is trickling its way back through the value chain and the supply chain to make a more organic way of growing foods. And, you know, things like carbon sequestration and all of that kind of stuff comes into that, right? So there has to be an economic incentive to drive it. So it's not like, you have to do this and we have to spend money on this. It's more like, oh, well, this country has chosen to do this because they want to have healthier food. And that is what trickles in. So I feel like it always has to start with like how it's going to impact people. And like similar to how the low emission zone in London has made it nicer to walk around the cities, it has to have that like how does it localize impact that person? And I feel like it has to start with smaller projects showing success and then growing into these big ones. Because if you went into like South Africa and you said, okay, well, we're going to like spend loads of money building this like really audacious plan to, create artificial clouds across like the Free State or something like that, which probably wouldn't be a good idea because the ground probably reflects quite a lot as well. But like these kind of things, it has to sort of grow to be something that's viable.
As a bit of a footnote over there, there was this one proposed geoengineering project that was essentially going and covering the entire Sahara Desert with trees, essentially using like desalination plants to create a whole bunch of fresh water and then covering it with trees. And when the math was all said and done, the reflectiveness of the desert actually contributes more to global cooling than the carbon that would be sequestered by those trees. So you would actually see more global warming because you've now covered up that entire desert, which is definitely very interesting.
Yeah, exactly. So I think when it comes to like the rolling out of geoengineering projects, I think that's where it's a little bit interesting. What are the ones that you're most bullish on? Like, which you've mentioned a couple already, which are the ones that you think are like the most, I don't know what the what kind of KPIs would you put in terms of like, if would you put it as just effectiveness? You put it as like the coolness of it, the coolness factor?
I'd say that the ones that I'm the most interested in are the ones that have like the least negative consequences or the least foreseen negative consequences, right? So it's like stratospheric aerosol injection. We don't know how that's going to affect the atmosphere. We think it's going to be great, but we have also, let's take for instance, figured out that like CFCs make a hole in the ozone layer. And we didn't know that when we started building a whole bunch of refrigeration products. So actually messing with the chemical composition of the atmosphere feels a bit risky to me, even though it could theoretically be a good thing. The one that I feel is the most undoable, the one that is the most implausible, but probably the one that we would have the most control over would be like the space-based reflectors, where you send a whole bunch of spaceships up with giant pieces of tin foil that just reflect a bunch of the sunlight back. Because what we can do is we can just like, you know, the guys on the ground with his little remote control is like, okay, it looks like we're having a bit of a hot year, like move these ones into place. It's like some people were like some shade in Ohio. Okay.
It reminds me of like, you know, in South Africa, some people get those like over their stoop, they'll get like this sort of metal thing, and you can like twist it round and it will open and close. So it's kind of like that, except they'll just have a really long twister.
So that one is probably the least plausible one, just because of how expensive it is to send stuff into space, especially at that scale. But I like the idea. Then there's one that you
talk a little bit more about that, right? Like, so is that, what was the idea with that? Is because I've also heard of some where they're like, you could go closer to the sun, right? And then you would just have to have a sort of like a smaller area, and you would like create like a couple of like these reflective arrays of I think that would also be really cool, because then you can like kind of
So that's pretty much the idea, is you like send a bunch of spaceships up that have a unfolding piece of material, and we can actually make these reflective materials incredibly light. And you know, because in space it's pretty empty, it's why it's called space. You can actually just like unfold these in zero G until they're, you know, the size of a small piece of a small country in Europe. And then you just zoom it a little bit closer to the sun. And so there's there's a bunch of places that we could put it. I'd say that the one that is the most often proposed is a Lagrange point. That is the point between the sun and the earth, or one of the Lagrange points is between the sun and the earth, where the gravity of earth and the gravity of the sun kind of cancel each other out. So it doesn't actually require any fuel to stay there, except for just minor adjustments sometimes. And then just sitting there being a big old reflector. So I think that's again, very expensive project, but pretty neat idea. But then the one that you mentioned earlier about putting iron in the oceans to stimulate phytoplankton growth is, so that's more of a carbon sequestration method on a large scale, but that does count as geoengineering. So that's essentially seeding like a whole bunch of really, really fine iron into the water to just spark growth of these organisms that gobble up CO2 and then die and fall to the bottom of the ocean. And a similar but different thing would be marine cloud brightening, where you create a more reflective set of like low-lying marine clouds by building a whole bunch of machines that just spray a fine sea mist into the sky. So essentially what that does is it creates these artificial low-lying clouds that reflects a whole bunch of radiation back into space. And this is actually the inverse of what I think it's called cirrus cloud thinning, where the high-level clouds, like cirrus clouds, actually have the inverse impact in that they actually insulate Earth and keep more heat in. So what we do is we change the chemical composition of these clouds, or we go and we seed them to make it rain or something. I'm not too sure of the entire details, but we essentially dissipate these high-lying clouds, and then we increase the density of these low-lying clouds so that we send more heat out than heat that is retained. And then there's simple ones like, this is one that I've thought myself, if a desert has a really high surface albedo, right, and reflects a whole bunch of light back into space, then theoretically we can go and, let's say for instance, manufacture a whole bunch of really thin, really reflective material, right? And we can create not like a solar farm, but just a mirror farm that just shoots a whole bunch of that light back into space, right? Because it's certainly a lot cheaper to manufacture than solar panels. And if the underlying intention is just to cool down the atmosphere, then theoretically that could work. It'll be really bright if you fly over it in an airplane. But another proposal for that is just inside of cities have a mandate that all roofs need to be painted white.
Yeah, that's interesting. So those are like some of the ones. Out of all of them, which one would you be most interested to work on or see come to life in terms of like the impact, or which one, if you had to pick one that you think would work the most, which one would it be?
So I'm not a climate scientist, right? But the one that climate scientists are the most bullish on, and this is the one that is like being talked about in the United States government and other, you know, big organizations like the EU around the world, is the aerosol injection, because it seems to be the most cost-effective one. Putting a spaceship up into space, as we said, not very cost-effective. Going and building giant mirror arrays in, you know, these are all very difficult to do. But it turns out that the cost of going and putting these aerosols into the atmosphere is actually not that high when you look at it in a, you know, holistic sense, with, you know, the entire GDP of the world at your disposal. So essentially what you do is you just fill up a whole bunch of what are like weather balloons with some or other form of sulfur gas, and then they have they're built in such a way that when they reach a certain pressure point, they open, they break apart. So you build them in such a way that pressure point where they open is where the stratosphere is. So they go up, 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 and then they get to the stratosphere and they break apart. And there's now aerosols in the stratosphere that should keep us cooler for the next year. And from what we can tell by studying the effects of the the aerosols from the container ships is that it doesn't stick around for that long. So it'll contribute to cooling for like a year or two, and then we have to do it again. So it is in a way reversible because we just stopped doing it. I'd say that if there are a whole bunch of really smart scientists who think that this is the most cost-effective and potentially one of the best ways to do it, I'd agree with them over there. But I am still kind of a bit weird about changing our atmospheric chemistry.
What does a scale out look like for that? Because I imagine they're like testing it somewhere in the US. Like how, like they do this balloon test, and obviously they're doing some sort of measurements somewhere. Are we going to have like balloon centers where, around the world where they're all launching these? Like, are UFO sightings going to shoot up, or like, how are they going to get so many balloons in the air? Or can they just do it in one spot and it works for the whole world? Or
I'm not too sure if it works everywhere, all over the world from, but maybe it does. There is already a startup in the United States, because of course there is, that will offset your carbon for the year by sending up these balloons. But the Casey Handmer, who's working on Terraform Industries, which is essentially a way to turn atmospheric carbon dioxide into stuff like aviation fuel, he makes the case for solar radiation management with these aerosols. And he also makes the case that so it's sulfur dioxide injection, and he reckons that it is actually reasonably within the cost of the world. Let me see if we can get 200,000 of the 5-ton balloons into the air annually, which sounds like a lot, but I mean, how many Walmarts are there? So that would essentially...
I feel like it's going to, like, if they have it, like, open to the world where anyone can just launch these things, I think that's where it starts to get a bit hectic, because you don't quite know, like, what's going on up there. So I feel like that scale out is going to be interesting, because having alternative players means that there's maybe, like, cheapening of the process.
Yeah, that's true. The
one that I was, when I, in recent researching this, is I also looked at the I think it's called, the company's called WhaleX, that like injects the iron into the water. The other one that I thought was quite cool is basically setting up farms, seaweed farms, in like different parts of the oceans to do more of that kind of accelerating like the natural processes, right? So instead of like doing something that you're not quite sure the effect of, you just create like a certain isolated area and you just grow lots of seaweed. I mean, theoretically you could probably do it like in a desert too if you wanted to, but I like those kind of like using nature to accelerate the process kind of mechanisms. And I also think, because although at the moment, this is what I'm most bullish on, is like people coming up with ways of using those kind of materials for other purposes, right? Because I think that's like a common trend that I think we both agree on, is that taking carbon, putting it into some sort of like biochar or some sort of like physical product, and then just putting it somewhere feels like the most natural way of doing that. Other than the sort of biological aspects of it, like I think there's like a couple of experiments where they've figured out how like plants do their taking carbon and converting it into starch. So there's a few like real offshoots that might come out. But yeah, I think those are the ones that I'm most excited about, because I'm also like quite keen on helping sort out the oceans, because I feel like the majority of the oceans is where like that kind of stuff is happening. Like the phytoplankton is where most of the carbon dioxide is converted into oxygen. And so I feel like having more ecological protection of those areas will lead to a, a better balance with people and those ecosystems.
Yeah, and I do agree with you. I think what a lot of the use cases around these geoengineering projects are is they're really just a stopgap. So everyone kind of agrees that we need to figure out how to stop putting CO2 into the atmosphere, and also we need to remove all the legacy CO2. However, we can't do that in the next 50 to 100 years, but we can give ourselves some more breathing room. So what we do is we inject aerosols into the upper atmosphere for the next 50 to 100 years at diminishing rates as we remove more and more CO2 from the atmosphere until we're at, you know, the pre-industrial levels. And then we just keep an eye on the climate. And if it starts getting too cold, we start pumping CO2. And if it starts getting too warm, we start pumping sulfur dioxide. Now, what I find interesting about this, just more on a like philosophical standpoint, is that once we start doing this and we start tweaking the atmosphere on a global level, is we enter the realms of like the science fiction civilization where we have control over our planet, right? So as you know, Earth goes through cycles where it goes into an ice age and then out of an ice age and then into an ice age and then out of an ice age. And an ice age would be pretty terrible for us, right? We're supposed to be heading into an ice age right now, but because of global warming, and when I say we're supposed to be heading into an ice age, I'm not talking about like anywhere in the foreseeable future. I'm talking like, you know, tens, hundreds of thousands of years. But we are supposed to be getting cooler, but instead we're getting hotter, right? But once we, let's say, for instance, remove all of the legacy CO2 out of the atmosphere, we will theoretically start to get cooler again. But that's also not good for humans, because we kind of want to have a stable climate, because we've got all the crops that work really well in this climate. We, you know, like Mediterranean climate over here and Nordic climate over there. So what we do is we just have like these places all the way around the world that just have a whole bunch of like tanks of CO2 and tanks of sulfur dioxide. And they're like, oh, it looks like it's going to be a hot summer. You know, you release a couple of balloons out the window. And we just have the most stable climate forever.
Well, imagine like someone creates like a global thermostat, right? And then you you basically tweak the dial and it would like change it to depending on what value would it be.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, like, and also if you have this like global, what would you set it at, right? Because I feel like also assuming you can get some sort of like reversing of global warming, like when would people say that it's like enough, right? Do you, and it's most likely going to have this kind of like, you know, typical control loop where you have like an X, like a shoot up, and then you're going to go under, and then it's going to like sort of oscillate until it gets to like some sort of static. So I feel like all these projects, if we are able to get it, would there be like an undershooting where we have like the planet gets too cool, and then we'll have like, you know, 20, 30 years where we'll have you know, someone have a huge presentation about the Earth getting really too cool.
Yeah. and too cool is worse than too hot, right? So like as the Earth heats up right now, global warming, it's a problem, but the world becomes more tropical, means there's more arable farmland. There's also more tropical storms, which isn't a great thing. When the world gets too cool, yeah, there's more diseases and stuff like that. When the world gets too cool, like we saw with these volcanoes we've seen in human history, where it like cools down the Earth for a year, is there's widespread crop failure and famine, and hundreds of thousands of people die, right? So yeah. So we do have to be kind of careful, like, oh no, I added an extra zero to the number of balloons I was supposed to send up. Looks like we're going into a, you know, winter of sorts for the next 20 years.
Yeah.
So we do have to definitely be careful with that. But I think also, similarly to when the pandemic when everyone got vaccines for COVID, right? Is that, let's assume for a second, and this is debatable depending on who you are, that the vaccines are perfectly harmless and safe, right? And there are no side effects. there are still going to be complaints of people who died from the vaccine or got really sick from the vaccine, right? Because you go and you get a shot one day, and then the next day you keel over and die. Even if it is unrelated, you've got something that you can point at and say, like, hey, it's because of this, right? And so what happens is, if we go and we roll out a fundamentally large scale project, like we send up all these aerosols into the stratosphere, and then unrelated, a freak tornado goes through a part of the country that doesn't generally have tornadoes, even if this is completely unrelated, the government that sent up those aerosols are going to get sued, right, for causing this tornado, or at least there's going to be public backlash, and there's going to be on social media saying, like, oh, it's been the coldest year on record over here, and the lake's frozen over, and these local fishermen can't fish on the lake because, you know, the government's fucking with the atmosphere.
Yeah.
And so not everyone's going to be happy, but I think it's one of the largest questions of for the greater good. And so it is actually like a bit of a philosophical question over there.
Yeah, it's almost like the climate industry must become like one of the biggest industries, because if we have enough projects, and these big projects are like great, but if we can find small projects that could be theoretically started by an individual and would be profitable, like I see there's this one company that's all they're doing is just putting nets across the biggest polluting rivers in the world and basically capturing all of that and then just throwing it away or recycling it. But if you create a business model that is like efficient enough to do that, someone's like, hey, I'm going to just do this for my country, and I'm going to copy that exact model, and you can make like a certain amount of money. If there's enough economy around this like green tech industry, then I think more people will get into it. And if it's embedded as part of like what you do, because it's a profitable thing to do, again, talking to incentives, I think that's really where people start to say, like, okay, like this is like good for the planet. We have people who can verify it. And I'm not doing it because it's good for the planet. I'm doing it because it's kind of like profitable for me. I feel like that's where it becomes like, maybe on a smaller country, it will work first before it goes to like countries with lots of people. But I think if your economy is based on like this, doing this thing, and it's embedded, and it's not like some offshoot, because I feel now like people think, oh yeah, you know, I'll think about green tech when I'm actually profitable, or when I'm actually making money. It's not a big issue for us now. It's kind of like pushed to the side. And I think once it becomes like, oh no, this is important to you, because you, Mr. Furniture Manufacturer, might not have trees that you can actually convert into furniture. So your business might go under if you don't have trees, right? So like bringing that into the normal economy, I think that's where it becomes like really valuable, and it's a little bit easier to have these larger projects.
So that actually is it's a very good point. And it actually makes a very good case for the geoengineering project of just going and planting a fuck ton of trees. And there's a couple of good reasons for this, right? In order to plant enough trees for it to make a measurable impact, it's a lot, right? It's like a lot of trees. And a very expensive project. But there's a few things that make this actually fairly compelling. And the first one is, we don't need any extra technology. We don't need to figure out how to put spacecraft up in the sky and create umbrellas for the Earth. And it's also a very well explored place, right? We know, we've seen trees grow. We know how to grow trees. So there are a lot fewer unknown unknowns. Then it can also be done by a unskilled labor force, right? And there are a whole bunch of additional benefits to having trees, such as improved air quality and improved microclimates and increased rainfall and blah, 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 blah. And so The third, and I think the most important one in this context, or at least in the context of what we're talking about, is that there are very few proponents for not planting trees, right? There are a whole bunch of people who are against injecting atmospheric carbon. There are a whole bunch of people against fucking with the ecology of the ocean, changing the clouds. But there will be very few people who are like, you know what? This place that used to have a forest and doesn't have a forest, I actually like it without a forest. We shouldn't have a forest there, right? And so it's actually something that we can do today is to start on that kind of geoengineering project. Even if it isn't the most cost-effective, it seems to be the most doable with the resources that we have and the kind of culture that we have.
And I think that's why people do it, because it's got that mindshare value. It's like, that's all that, if you look at like Greenpeace and all of these like organizations, I think one of their biggest things that they try to do is get into the mindset of people. And planting trees is maybe the first element that gets people like, okay, I can see why this is good. Even like, you know, getting people to interact with planting trees can help them be a bit more appreciative of the natural environment, all of those aspects. Then people become more interested in like, oh, well, what is this other like geoengineering thing, or what are these other like projects and how do they all factor into this ecosystem? And making people more aware of the environment and not aware of just their mobile phone and their city where they live, right? And I think that shift is starting now and happening already. So accelerating that will then lead to these bigger projects and people getting on board and most of all funding them, I guess.